So this is, we're moving fast forward to Chachma, number two Sphira. A friend of mine asked his daughter, who was only about 5 or 6 years old, he asked her, "Honey, what would you rather be, smart or pretty?" So the little girl, without hesitation, said, "Smart." And he was a little surprised. So I said, "Well, that's really nice, honey. Well, why? Why did you pick being smart?" She said, "Well, Daddy, if I were lost, what would good looks help me?" Interesting, right? From the mouth of babes. If she was good looking, someone would stop for her. Right, okay. So we're now talking about Chachma. Chachma in the arrangement of what's called the Sefirot is the manifestation of Hashem as manifest through the attribute of Chachma, wisdom. And let's try and understand what that means experientially for us. So we spoke about how Keter is the expression of Hashem as the ultimate self, and how each and every one of us is a ray of that supreme divine self. Chachma and Bina are really two sides of this one self. Okay? Chachma is that aspect of self which is transcendent, the observer, and Bina is that aspect of self which is immanent, the participant. Right? And we talked about this a little bit the other day, whereby, if, for instance, we've experienced this mysterious schism in our own self, whereby we're in our experience and watching our experience at the same time. Okay? We are simultaneously able to be objective and subjective. Okay? At the same time. So a person could literally be hearing themselves yelling. Right? Hearing themselves yelling. And of course you've got to be very careful, because on one hand, if you're really very self-conscious, which is what Chachma would be, self-conscious, you're conscious of the self, you're watching yourself in a certain way, you're outside, so then you don't flow. But on the other hand, if you're completely in it, and you're not watching yourself, you lose control, right? And it's like, for me, when I'm teaching, I'm kind of in and out of that experience constantly. It's like an oscillation. Right? So if I laugh at my jokes, it's because I don't think they're my jokes. Right? I hear them for the first time just like everybody else hears them for the first time. And so to me, I'm surprised by stuff that comes out of my mouth. I don't know where that came from. And there's this, on one hand, you're in the experience of teaching, and yet you're also watching yourself teaching. Right? And you got to be in and out of it at the same time. I used to teach in a center, it was the Israel Center, it had a different building, but in the room that I taught, there were windows across from me. I taught at night. So one day I was teaching, I was really into it, and then suddenly I saw this guy teaching, because I saw a reflection of myself teaching. And I totally lost my train of thought, because I said, "This guy looks so stupid." Who's listening to him? But so on one hand, you've got to be completely in the experience, and yet, if you're completely in the experience, you lose control, right? So you kind of have to be the actor and producer of your life at the same time. Right. And you can't be at the same time, so you really oscillate back and forth. And therefore in Kabbalah, Chachma and Bina are described as two lovers who are always together. There's still a distinction. But these two attributes, these two powers in our lives, are united, and yet there is a distinction. So it's almost as if, really, Keter through the prism of our awareness, as we try to understand the meaning of the expression of Hashem in our lives, rooted in Keter, in a total complete unity, is these two paradoxical aspects of consciousness. Right? Objective consciousness and subjective consciousness. So Chachma is the ability to be an observer, and Chachma is the ability to be objective. Now, in Jewish tradition, Chachma is considered to be more male, and Bina is considered to be more female. And in fact, the Talmud says that women have more Bina than men. Right? More Bina than men. How is that so? Because men are a little bit more aloof. They're a little more disconnected. They're a little more able to kind of walk out of it and look at it. And there's an advantage to that, and there's a big disadvantage to that. Right? Women, on the other hand, are completely in the experience. They completely merge with what they're doing. And so women have the strength of being subjective, being complete participants in what's going on, and men are a little more self-conscious and a little bit more watching. Now, of course, within women there's Chachma and Bina, within men there's Chachma and Bina, but if we were to just look at it in a pure archetypical way, so the power of Chachma is a power, of course, that's not from us, but although within us, it's Hashem's power of Chachma that Hashem is going to share with us, is the power of objectivity, the power of transcendence, the power of stepping out of the situation and looking at it more objectively, whereby the power of Bina is the power to get inside it and see and experience it from inside. Therefore, it says in the Talmud, you have over here in the Gemara Tamid 32a, who is wise? He who sees the nolad. Now, the word nolad can either be translated as the birthing, or it could be translated as the born or the baby. Okay? That's the Chacham. The Chacham is able to see, watch what's going on. Right? The woman is not watching the birth. If she is, right, it's because they have a television camera on her. But she's not watching the birth. She's giving birth. Right? Men don't give birth. Men watch the birth. Some men don't watch the birth. Some men run. Right? Some men just don't, whatever. But, when we had our, when Nuriel, we decided that we're not going to make the mistake we made all the other times and got to the hospital too early. And now you wait and you wait and you wait. We know this will take a long time. We know that kind of takes a good almost 24 hours to give birth. So we decided that we would take a nice, beautiful stroll to the hospital. And we stopped in the parks, and it was really wonderful. And then when we got to the hospital, they told us that Hannah had dehydrated because we were outside too much. Anyway, took an ultrasound, and it turns out that Nuri, he's a fun kid, he flipped. Right? So the day before she was checked and he was completely in place, and he just flipped. So now they have to do a cesarean. Right? Now we had picked this particular hospital because I wanted to watch this birth. The hospital that we had been before, they don't let you watch the birth. Some hospitals in Israel don't let you watch the birth. The men, right? They gotta be outside the room. This hospital is known that the men can be in the room. And so we chose it for that reason, because I wanted to be at the birth. And now they tell me I can't be at the birth because it's a cesarean. So I said, what are you talking about? I have to be at this birth. Right? And my wife is saying, don't argue with him. He's going to cut me into pieces. And I'm getting into a fight with the surgeon. And my wife's saying, don't get him angry. But I was getting upset because I want to watch this birth. He says, I don't want a guy faint on my floor when I'm trying. I said, me? Faint? Me? I don't faint. Right? I'm miss the blood. I like it. Right? I'm happy to see this. Right? And I don't mind you cutting my wife up. It's for good reasons. Right? So they finally allowed me to come into the birth, but only when they were just about to bring the baby out. Right? But that's basically it. Right? Chana was on the table. Right? She was in the birth. And I was watching it. Okay? I watched the birth. And there's something really beautiful about being able to just watch. You know, I remember we took, you know, courses, Lamaze, you know, like, you know, how to breathe, how to, you know, how to relax, right? Well, when we finally got there, I felt more like a schlamaz. I didn't feel like an expert of Lamaze. I felt like an expert schlamazel, right? Because I just totally freaked at our first birth. I went crazy. I asked for an epidural. You know, it was like I was going nuts. So, you know, there's an advantage of watching. There's a certain, you know, calmness. I'm in it and this is inside me. So we'll get it out. But the idea is that the chachma is the power to watch, to observe, to have objectivity, but also objective thinking in terms of objectives. Being able to see the birth as it happens, but also see the birth, meaning what will happen. So chachma is foresight. Chachma is the ability to see future consequences. Right? Chachma is what they say, start with the end in mind. And that's what we say in L'chadodi, likrat kala. Sof ma'aseh b'machsheva techila. So the sof ma'aseh is I'm able to get this flash of inspiration and I see a picture of the future, of where I'm going. Okay? And I'm objective about this, but it's a given. So chachma is really inspirational thinking. It's creative thinking. Right? Creative thinking. It really would be called conceptualization because it's conception, right? Interesting that conception, which is a woman is conceives, and conceive is the same word. Why? So chokhmah is the power to conceive, right? But then you watch the birth, right? What man offers is a seed. Right? And then he watches 9 months, his wife, right? But she takes the process and she nurtures the process, right? But the male aspect of chachma is a flash. And so chachma is this vision of yourself and who you think you ought to be. And some of us are stuck right there. We just don't have the vision. Right? We have the will, but if you have the will, but you don't have the vision, then will without wisdom is wild. It's anarchy. You've got so much drive. You've got such incredible yearning. Right? But you don't have a vision for yourself. Right? And you should know that Hashem has a vision for you for sure. But the problem is, can you align your vision of yourself with Hashem's vision of yourself? And when you do, right, then Hashem's chachma pours into you and you get that vision. Right? But without the vision, there's no drive, there's no vitality, there's no excitement. Now, Bina takes the vision. And we are taught that Bina is la'avin devar mitoch devar. Bina is to understand something from within something. Right? So it's subjective. So sometimes you have a vision and you just look at it from a distance. Right? But now you've got to get inside your vision, feel the vision, in order to then extrapolate the details. And therefore, chachma is inspirational thinking, whereby bina is strategic thinking. Chachma is just a picture. You know, you just get this picture that you are producing the greatest works of art, but you're only 13. Right? But you get this vision of yourself and where you see yourself in the future. Right? But now, you gotta extrapolate the details of what does that really mean, and what's the plan in order to get there. So some people are visionaries, and some people are very strong in strategic thinking. They don't have creative minds, but if you give them a creative concept, a vision, a flash of inspiration, they can take that, nurture that, get inside it, and extrapolate out of it the details, the plan. In other words, what's the difference between Chachma and Bina? Chachma is a dream, right? But what's the dream? What's the difference between a dream and a goal? A goal has a deadline, right? And a goal has a plan. And therefore, Chachma without Bina means you're a dreamer. You're just a dreamer. You have these visions of yourself, visions of the world, visions of the Jewish people, whatever these visions are. You just get it, you see it, it's connected to seeing, just like you see this painting right now. You don't see the details, you just see it, all laid out in front of you, the picture. Right? But you didn't get into the details, nor how this painter even got it, or realized that really, to get to that, the painter had to actually go to school for many, many years. You know, like you go to a concert and suddenly you get this flash and you see yourself up there playing jazz. And it's so compelling and it feels so right. And it just feels like God's talking to you. And that's it. That's my vision. That's it. Right? So, you know, so you go up to this jazz player who was a catalyst for this incredible vision that you just feel a light went off over your head. And you say, well, I want to be like you. Right? So he says, okay, I'll tell you where I went. I went to a school in Kentucky for jazz. Well, good. So a guy registers for school, right? And first day, they're doing all this boring theory. The history of saxophones. Like, who cares? I don't know history of saxophone. And then we're the history of jazz. And then we've got all these exercises that we're doing. And these painful exercises. And you say, I don't want this. I envision myself being this spontaneous, creative jazz player. Right? But they tell you, yeah, it's a great vision. And hold that vision. Because if you lose that vision, you're not going to get there. But this is how you get there. These are the steps. Right? These are the details. And life is in the details. So you get the big picture is Chachma, and it's a flash, and it's inspirational, it's exciting, and you see it. You see the birth, you're objective about this. But now you need the Bina, the insight, not the foresight, but Bina is the insight to now get inside the vision and pick apart the anatomy of this vision, and how this vision is going to come to be. Right? So Chachma is goal-oriented thinking, where you're just into the future, and Bina brings you into the now. Okay, now that we're here, and in this situation, and these are what we have to work with, how do we get to there? And we need both of those. Right? We need both of those. And Bina is a much more woman's strength. Right? Men don't so much have the patience generally for this. Right? Bina is logistics. Bina is paying attention to details. Right? And it's more of a feminine thing. Again, it doesn't mean that man is very good at paying detail is feminine. It just means this is a more feminine quality. It doesn't mean that he's feminine. Okay? So these are powers in our lives. Where just suddenly you just get this vision, and it's so clear, and you just get this charge, and then it just passes. Because if you don't get a plan to your vision, right? And I was told that Bina is being smart. SMART stands for specific, measurable, accountable, reachable, tangible. Bina's being smart, right? The dreamer's got a dream. But now you've got to take the dream, and now you've got to bring it into being smart. S, specific. Right? You got to be specific over here, right? M, it's got to be measurable steps, right? How will you know you did what you said you're going to do? What are your criteria for success? Accountable. I have to set up some kind of checks and balances of that I'm getting there. And then I have to know it's reachable. Like, this could just be a ridiculous dream. So I got to bring it down to reality. That's very nice that you dream, but now, where are you in this dream? What are your talents? What do you have available to you? And it's tangible, it's concrete. And therefore, Bina is considered to be the mother. The man, he gives the spark, the seed, and he leaves, right? There is romance, there's energy. And the woman takes that seed and holds on to it for 9 months and brings out of it, right, and nurtures to give birth. And he watches the birth, but she does the birth. And these are the two powers in our lives, Chachma and Bina, right, that are rooted in Keter. Okay, so how does one get to Chachma? How do I get that vision? Some people just don't have a vision for themselves. You know, Baruch Hashem, I had a vision, right? And I'm still struggling with it, right? But my wife thought it was nuts. When she met me, she thought this guy's a dreamer. The weirdest guy, this young guy, and he's got visions of some kind of leadership. Visions of doing something and having his own, you know, center. You know, well, I was 23, 24 when we were dating. And she thought, she told me this later, she didn't tell me while we were dating. She was very smart. But she later on told me, I really thought you were nuts. I mean, you just say these things and that you felt this calling and you saw this vision of who you felt you ought to be and can be and what you need to do, you know. And I remember one day just sitting there at the kitchen table, and again, the dreamer in me is just dreaming away, imagining away, and I said, I think I'll call it Israelite. Like, again, it's nothing. It's just ideas in your head. She says, what? Like, we're talking about something else, but I'm dreaming, right? What? I said, well, you know, my organization, my worldwide organization. Right. Okay, no problem. Just, could you take out the garbage? Soon. We'll get to that, right? Once I have this world organization, we won't have garbage. That won't be an issue, right? So I'm dealing with it, right? But that's it, you know? And then I see you all sitting here, and I think, isn't that amazing? And it's just a given, like, how do you get these visions? It's not, you don't get them. They're just given to them. You just open yourself up and you ask Hashem, please Hashem, what do you want me to be doing with myself? Right? And you know, if you got a dream, there's a reason why Hashem's putting that dream in your head. But what's the format of getting the dream? It comes from Keter. But again, Keter is no format. It's just pure will. Right? There's no protocol yet. So that's why Chachma is a given. That's why they describe it as a flashlight goes off. You know, a light bulb goes off in his head. It's that experience where the guy starts screaming, Eureka! Right? It's the experience where, we've had this experience in yeshiva, I remember, you'd be working on a gemara, and suddenly it would just hit you what this gemara is about, and it would often happen at the exact same time. You and your chavrus would look at each other and say, I got it! And you'd say it at the exact same time, and you go, you got it? I got it. Okay, so what is it? You first. I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You just said you got it. You got it. All right, well, I don't know. But we'll get it. And that's going to Bina. right? The first he got is Chachma. It's just this potential flash. And it's so fast, right? So now you gotta like get it down and formulate it, articulate it, right? And but how do you get the vision? How do you open yourself up to have the vision? I know I ought to be something. I just feel deep inside I didn't come here to do nothing. And I know I'm special. I just know I'm special. I know I've got something I could do. What is that? And that is the gift of Chachma. To be able to see the birth. To not only to be objective, but to be able to see the future. To see the potential. To see the birth. So how do we get there? So if you look at number two on the page over here, on Chachma. Yeah.
So you said that Chachma is like a flash. And in my life, I feel like those flashes and the dreams, really a lot of good comes out of it when I can extend that flash and hold on to it.
That's Bina. That's the next step. Now you've got to strategize. Now you've got to plan. Right? But if you don't plan, and if you can't get inside the picture now, and feel it from inside, and also pull it apart and see what's the anatomy of this image, which is just a picture, and then get underneath it and get inside it, that's what understanding means. You get under what's the standing. Right? What's under this? And you gotta get underneath and beneath it. And really understand what this is gonna be from planet Earth. From the perspective of Earth, what is it gonna take for this vision to happen? You're in heaven right now. You have this vision and you're looking down at it and it's just like, wow. But then you gotta get under it and look at it from Earth. Well, this will take money. Well, that'll take care of that. This will take patience. This will take, a lot of planning, a lot of time, a lot of, difficult decisions. But that's the planning part of it. That's where sometimes we get stuck. So some people are stuck, they don't have the vision, but they got great strategic thinking, but they don't know what to strategically think about and analyze. And some people, they got the vision, but they don't have the strategy, right? And so what do we do? But right now I want to talk about how do we get the vision, right? Because you don't get it. You have to just be receptive and open yourself up to receive it. So look at number two over here on your Chachma source sheet. Okay, the power to ask the question what? The Zohar points out that the word Chachma has a little hint to it. I've told you that Kabbalists like to play Scrabble. So Chachma is if I take the Chet and put it in front of the Chaf, I get Koach Ma, the power of what? What? The power of what? Which is the power to ask questions. Okay? What's unique about human beings is we can ask questions. Animals don't ask questions. Right? And what enables us to ask questions is that we can get out of our experience. We can look at the situation. We can say, Maze, what is this? What is my life all about? And you gotta be able to get out of your life and look at it in order to ask the question. Animals are completely in their experience. They're completely in their emotion. You can see a dog that's sad. I've seen sad dogs, right? Especially those who come to my class, right? Because they don't get it. But does the dog know he's sad? Does the dog say, gee, I'm so sad, but I remember times when I was happy. And I can see myself being happy. Oh, look at that cat. He so annoys me. He's always happy. He is always happy. Right? Why can't I be like that cat? Well, so those kind of questions means you can get out of your experience enough to ask and look at it, right? And look at other people's experience and That's an amazing thing. That's consciousness. That's self-consciousness. So the Zohar tells us that Koach Ma, Chachma is the power of the question, of the Ma. What? As it says in Brigei Avot, if I am not for myself, who will be? But if I am just for myself, Ma, what am I? I'm a what? If I'm just for myself, and I don't see myself fulfilling and serving some greater purpose greater than myself, I'm a what? So Koach Ma is the ability to ask and to sense that there's an ought to be, that I'm not there yet. I have a vision and expectations for myself. So here's something I want to read with you, which is from Abraham Heschel, from a book called Who is Man? Every human being has some sense of what a human being ought to be. Why? Does a dog have a sense of what it ought to be? I ought to be a prize-winning dog. Does a horse have a sense of, I ought to be the most famous racehorse in the world? They don't live in the ought to be, they just be. Not animals, be. But there isn't the sense of ought to be. One, to look at themselves and measure where they're at. And two, to have an vision of where they could be and they're not yet. Okay? Animals in the complete now. The power of Chachma is the ability to transcend time. I'm now, but I've got a vision of the future and I've got a memory of the past. Right? Now, as we go up in our anatomy, our physical body are now. We can't feel tomorrow. Right? We can only feel what we feel now. Okay? Our emotions, we can feel a little bit more about, you might get excited about what's going to happen tomorrow, but that's because my mind is able to envision tomorrow. Right? So whereby my emotions are really basically stuck in the present, and my body is totally stuck in the present, right? My mind is able to transcend time. And I'm able to think about the future. It's able to transcend space. I'm able to think about the moon. Right? But I'm not able to feel about the moon. And if I feel something about the moon, it's only because I'm thinking about the moon. Right? So now I'm feeling now what I'm thinking. Right? But the feeling is rooted in the now, and the physical sensations are rooted in the now, but Chachma, Bina, and Dat, and Keter, is your connection to timelessness. And so an animal doesn't have that. We come in this world and we have a sense that I ought to be something. And it's a crazy thing. And people have these dreams about these fantasies about who they could be. And they don't seem to be happy with who they are. There's this deep sense of who I ought to be. So every human being has some sense of what a human being ought to be, and is often challenged with the conflict between who he is and who he ought to be. He lives within the tension between existence and expectation. He knows too much. Right? That's the problem. Animals are happy. They're basically happy. And when they're sad, they don't know they're sad. They're just sad. But they don't notice that because they can't get out of their sadness and say, oh, I am sad and I ought to be happy. There isn't the sense of I ought to be to create this tension, right? So I'm sad, I'm sad. Same thing with babies, you know? Watch my granddaughter. She's crying, right? Father picks her up, stops laughing. Like, how does she do that? Well, because she doesn't hold on to the memory and she just, you know, I'm now and I'm now. But we are not like that. Because as we evolve, our minds are able to envision who we ought to be. Who we potentially could be. We see the birth. We see the latent potential waiting to be born. And that creates conflict in our lives. Because a human being lives in the midst of existence and expectation. And that's what just, you know, we have great expectations. Yeah. And you should know that Judaism makes your life even more challenging. Because it gives you even greater expectations. It tells you you ought to be like God. Right? You ought to be like God. He gives you a vision. And therefore, is it possible to be human and well adjusted? Right? It's not. Human are maladjusted creatures. Because I'm in the now, and yet I'm dreaming about the future. I am what I am, and yet I'm deeply aware of who I ought to be. And that's what it is. Or is bewilderment an intrinsic ingredient for being human? Right? Yes, the power to question. We are bewildered. Right? Bewildered. Now, ancient man has tremendous admiration for animals because they're so not complex. They're not sitting around thinking about transcending myself, having visions of the beehive that I will someday build. Right? They don't have that. They're just in the here and the now, and they go with their flow. Right? And it's wild. But we can't be wild because we're bewildered. Right? We are bewildered. And so primitive man, in their religious ceremonies, would put on masks of animals because they want to be like animals. They admired and they had a nostalgic feeling of, I want to just be wild and free like an animal. I mean, have you ever seen a cat make a jump? It's unbelievable. And they don't seem to hesitate. They just, with such grace, they just go, whoosh, and they go, and they just with their little paws, they get it, and you go, man, I wish I could do that. They're just so in the flow. So one might be really jealous. There's only one problem. What? You know too much. It's too late. You know too much. You're able to get out of yourself and look at yourself and say, look at yourself. Is this the way you want to look? What is the vision you have for yourself? And that's a power that we've been given as human beings, and not one that we've invented, but one that Hashem is giving us right now, sharing with us the power of vision. And so, can man ever be natural? Or perhaps it's natural for him to be unnatural. Right? That's what's natural for us to be, unnatural. We want to be like animals. Animals just do what comes naturally. But we don't know how to do what comes naturally. Because we ask questions. There's a story in ancient tradition about how the frog used to run after the centipede. Right? And he used to basically harass the centipede. But the centipede, having so many legs, right? Having so many legs, was always able to beat the frog. One day the frog has a brilliant idea. And just as he sees the centipede down the street, the centipede's ready to run, the frog says, oh, Mr. Centipede, let's just forget about this. Because we've been doing this chase for a long time. And you know, I never get you, because you with those legs, I mean, all those little legs, that's so impressive. So the game's over, and you win. But I would like to ask you just one question, because I've so marveled over your abilities. When you walk, which foot do you put first? Well, so the centipede stopped and thought about that and was never able to walk again, right? Because he thought about it. Right? So in this particular book, the point was, stop thinking about it. That's our problem, is that we're thinking about it. But the reason why it's our problem is because it's not our problem. We are the problem. Because we're human and we have wisdom. We are observers of our lives, not just actors in our lives. Right? We're both the audience and the actor at the same time. And we do ask questions. We cannot ask questions. And if we didn't ask questions, we would forfeit the quest. Because the question is the key to the quest. And we quest. We come in this world with a quest. And Hashem has a request of us. Right? And we want to know, what do you want from me? And we come into this world with a sense of something is requested of me. And I have to reconnect to a quest and a vision that God has of me. Because Hashem has created everything with wisdom, everything with vision, everything with purpose, everything, even you and me. And so, it's not natural for us to be natural. We can't be animals. And so much of society tries to be. Right? But it's too late. We can see ourselves, and we can see our future. We can see the consequence, future consequence of our choices. And now we have wisdom to deal with. You cannot be you until you feel the painful problem of the conflict between who you are and who you ought to be. That's who you are. Who you are is conflict. If you don't have a conflict of who you are and who you ought to be, you're not who you are. Because that's who you are. You are conflict. That's why Rav Soloveitchik has an amazing teaching. It says that God created man, male and female, he created them. So there's a famous, you know, teaching that asks, well, did he create a him or did he create a them? And the answer is yes. So Rav Soloveitchik says that within the human being, within each and every one of us, is male and female. Right? So one understanding of it, that God created them, that the first human being was androgynous, and then God split this human being into two, to the male and the female. But there's an added value to this verse, that God created the human being, and within every male is female, and within every female is male. Right? And we are conflict. Because within us is the audience and the actor, the observer and the participant. And it's the observer that asks questions. It's the observer that looks at it and says, well, what's going on here? Where do I need to be getting to? Right? So, if you're not in that conflict, and you're trying to run away from it, and that's why, again, Judaism is a hard sell. Because Judaism is not selling inner peace. It doesn't believe it's possible. It believes that we are restless because we are trapped between the who I am and who I ought to be. Right? And that's our excitement. That's our drama. Who wants peace of mind? I remember I met this actor who told me that his acting teacher told him not to go to therapy because it would undermine his creativity, because neurosis is very good for creativity. He was a very neurotic guy. Now, I'm not going that far. But we know that precisely those are the creative people. Right? It's the restless people that are creative. Because they have a vision that they're impassioned to do. Right? So creativity comes with restlessness. Creativity comes with vision. And so this is chachma. And this is what we want. And so, and then ask, right? You got to be in this conflict, and then ask yourself, who am I? It is precisely the stress and anguish that makes man human and not just another animal. Because animals don't ask, who am I? Right? They don't. They just are. And they can't look at themselves and say, who am I? It doesn't do that. So he says, man's desire to know himself is part of being. Right? That's part of who we are. Is we want to know ourselves. We want to be the object of our knowing. Right? So we talk to ourselves, and we try to figure ourselves out. And who's the self that's figuring out the self? Right? That's the relationship of the Chachma and the Bina within us. To know himself, he must question himself. he must first question his desire for self-knowledge. His first question should be, why do I ask questions? That's the first question. Because animals don't ask questions. And I ask questions. Right? And Judaism is all about getting your kids to ask questions. And the first holiday of Pesach is all about and every family gets such joy to see that little kid get up and say that question. Because that's freedom. Slaves don't ask questions. They just do. But you who are created in the image of God, you ask questions. And that's what one of my teachers shared with me. What's the difference between a cult and Judaism? In a cult, you don't ask questions. In Judaism, you don't get answers. I'm just joking. They answer questions with a question. And it's all about the question. And people sit there and they learn. And what are they learning? They're asking questions. What did Rashi say? What was the Ramban's point? What is the purpose of this passage? Where does this really lead me? How does this help me be the ultimate me I can be? And we love to ask the questions. And why do we ask questions? Because we have within us a quest. And without the question, you can't get the vision. And the answer is, to why do I ask questions? I ask questions because I have a problem. I am in anguish over the conflict between what I intuit I ought to be and who I am. Chachma is a deep intuition of who I ought to be. Right? Who I ought to be. And a sense of who I am. And that's why I ask questions. Because I want to get to the ought to be. Man is driven to understand himself because he has a problem that stems from the conflict between existence and expectation. Modern man has failed to know what is authentic human existence. He has assumed the false identity and pretends to be what he is unable to be. Content. Right? That's the problem. We're trying to be content. And we're not content. And you know what? Judaism is constantly causing discontent. Because it wants creativity. Right? It wants energy. So we are conflict. But imagine you were a car, but you didn't know you were a car. Right? And suddenly you experience explosions within you. Right? What would you do? You go to a therapist, say, I don't know, I feel this incredible conflict within me. I'm constantly feeling this explosion, right? And the therapist says, well, that's really good. You got to accept yourself, right? You are a time bomb. No, I couldn't. I just feel I ought to be going places. I feel a drive within me, right? And the therapist says to the car, well, maybe that's because you are an automobile. And that really, the explosions is what propels you forward. And without them, you'd never get anywhere. So would that car be looking for inner peace? Right? If he does, he'll be sitting in a dump. Right? Because nobody wants a car that's at inner peace. I want a car that when I press the gas, there's combustion. And that combustion goes flying and gets that motor going and I'm flying forward. Right? So that's who we are. Right? We are tension. We are stress. But what do you do with it? Right? If you were a guitar string and you get angry that people keep plucking you, pulling your string, right? And tensing you up, you'd say, what is going on here? And then someone says to you, you're an F. You're a G. Wow! I love the tension. I love it. The oscillation back and forth. Right? And if I didn't have that tension, I'd be out of key. So we have to understand that who we are, the chachma within us tells us that we have a vision of a future. And there's an ought to be for us. Man is driven to understand himself because he has a problem. This stems from, okay, modern man has failed to be, wants to be content. Man is a problem. His mental anguish is what makes him human. Right? makes him a creator, that he has this. He is not free to choose whether or not he wants to know himself. Right? That's what's so amazing about people. How much people want to know themselves. Right? It's unbelievable. You know, if you want to start a conversation, oh, what's your sign? Right? Oh, I'm a Sagittarius. Oh, I'm a Pisces. Oh, I'm a, you know, well, what does that mean? And so people are so thirsty to know. You think you'd know yourself by now, right? And yet people go to graphologists and people go to handwriting, you know, they go to palm readers, right? They go to forehead readers. They go to tea leaf readers. They go to tarot card readers, right? Because they are in fascination, because they want to read themselves like a book. And that's just, we want to know ourselves. Self-conscious, self-aware is a theme of our lives, right? And when you succeed in self-aware, you become aware how the self is an expression of the ultimate self. So, right? So celebrate your neurosis. No, okay. I know I'm putting therapists out of job. No, that's not the point of this. So he is not free to choose whether or not he wants to know himself. He already has a degree of such knowledge. Preconceptions and standards for self-interpretation. He is born into conflict. He asks himself, who am I? He is compelled to try and know himself. This is fundamental to being human. The thought we think is where we are. It is the space of our inner life. Who he is includes who he thinks he is. Therefore, what we think about ourselves contributes to who we are. Therefore, the answer to who I am will not merely be descriptive, but creative. We become what we think of ourselves. Our image of ourselves affects who we are. In other words, when I try to know this, you know, this bottle, so knowing means I'm going to describe it. My description of it has no bearing on it. Right? So how I define a bottle, either I'll be right about it or wrong about it, but the definition doesn't transform what it is. But what you define about yourself is part of who you become. If you think you're a loser, you're a loser. Right? If I think this bottle is a pitcher, it's still a bottle. Right? But if I think I'm an animal, I'll start acting like an animal. And so that's why what you think about yourself, your vision for yourself, your deep intuition for who you ought to be, is absolutely critical to who you will be. And that's why self-consciousness, self-awareness, that's why asking the big question, who am I? So Keter is I am. That's Keter. It's a deep sense of I am. Chachma is a deep sense of who am I? What am I supposed to be? Who am I supposed to become? And that's the power of asking the questions. We have no questions now. No, I'm just joking. Any questions on the power of asking questions? The kolachma, the chachma, the power of what? What? What?
I don't know, through this conception, when we always say that women have this extra of Bina, and it sounds like the way it was described to me in the past, it's sort of this intuitive sixth sense type idea. But I'm getting that sort of description from Chachma.
Yes, it is. It is. I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's about the intuition. When it says that a woman has Bina Yetira, again the Gemara says that Bina is Lavin Devar Mitoch Devar, to understand something from within something. Okay? So women have a better understanding of people than men in general, because they're able to get inside and do empathetic thinking. They get inside the head of this person, their heart. But the man kind of looks at it. Right? And there's a value to be able to look at it. That's one of the reasons why, in general, Judaism is not in favor of women becoming judges. Right? Because a judge has to be cold, removed, aloof, completely objective, and he has no right to be sympathetic. He can't be sympathetic. Okay? You take a woman and you put her in a position of being a judge in court, right? So that's not really the prime use of her powers. But we've had judges that were women. Devorah was a judge, one of the greatest judges in the jury. So it's not impossible, right? But on an archetypical level, right, that's generally not. But if a woman feels this incredible calling in that way, then we maybe have to deal with that. Maybe in her case, she's got more chachma in that case, right? In that sense. But Bina, in terms of when they say that a woman has more intuition, it means they pick up on it, right? Whereby they're like Geiger counters. They're like, you know, it's like they get the vibes. It's a very different kind of knowing. You know, for instance, when some of you probably heard the story, but it gets better every time I say it because I change it. But it's a true story that I made up, which is when my wife and I were dating, and I was struggling with whether I would ask her to marry me. So I was really dealing with it, you know, trying to envision what we'd be and all that stuff, and I just couldn't come to the decision. So I tried to lay out all the good qualities I perceived, and maybe some of the, maybe a little challenging side. Of course, there are none. But and then I still didn't feel good about that. So I thought I would then give like a number system, because you know, like not everything's equal. So you know, this will be a 10, this will be a 5, this will be a 3, this will be a 10. And then I thought that my KCO could just decide my marriage for me by just adding up, and that's the way it is. But you know, but finally I realized that wasn't going to help, and I just have to do something human-like, choose. I was hoping it'd just be a mathematical conclusion, but it's not. I had to choose. So I decided, okay, I was scared, but I decided I would ask you to marry me. So we're sitting there, and I turn to her, and I say, you want to ask me? Nope. Oh, just having a good time tonight. How are you today? Nice night, isn't it? Right? Okay. And then I said, come on, you gotta ask her, you know? And so I said, well, I actually wanted to bring up the weather. And lovely weather we're having. And then finally I decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And I said, I wanted to ask you, would you marry me? And she said, yes. And I said, just one second. Just one second. Did you know I was going to ask you to marry me tonight? She says, no, it's a total surprise. Wait a second. Did you, like, think about this? Don't you think you should think about this? Don't you think you should, like, do you have a list of all my good and bad? Because there's a lot of bad there. You should really think about this. Like, you really ought to think about this. I mean, I wouldn't be so rash in this decision over here. And I said to her, well, how do you know that you want to marry me? She said, I just know. And I just said, women. Don't even figure this one out. I just know. She just gets inside it. She doesn't look at it. She's just inside the experience. I'm looking at our relationship. And she wasn't looking at our relationship. She was in it. Right? Now I had to get in it. That was the problem. I'm just like looking at it. Do I have to be in it now? But that's it. The woman, she's in the relationship. And he's kind of looking at the relationship. Right? So that's why she's got a certain knowing, but it comes from being mitoch devar, lavin devar mitoch, from inside it. It's a whole different story. You know, it's a whole different story. Any other questions? Yeah.
So apparently many people have a conflict between what they intuitively, what they are, And you see a lot of people asking questions, but I see a lot of the questions being rational. Being rationalization. People aren't really asking questions. They're kind of rationalizing why what they really are is okay. And so is this kind of a negative?
It's called Yetzer Hara. It's an evil inclination. You see, they say a story about a fellow who was shooting arrows. And then he would go run to where his arrow lies, landed, and he'd draw a bullseye around it. So someone came up to him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm an archer, right? He says, but generally there's a bullseye and you shoot for the bullseye. He said, well, that way you'll miss. You know, what I do works all the time. I shoot it in the air, and then where it lands, I put a bullseye around it. So that's how a lot of people run their life. They try to put the bullseye on where they landed. Rather than who they ought to be, they put a bullseye where they are. And that's where they think they ought to be. I ought to be where I am. But that's just a lie. Because that's not where you ought to be. You are a dynamic process of growth. You're a work in process. And you'll always be a work in process. But you have to have the vision. And that's Shabbos. Shabbos is the vision. Olam Haba is the vision. Okay, now, but without the top to our mountain, there's no climb. Okay? So that's the vision. Any other questions? Yeah.
It's not a question. It reminds me of what being able to ask a question, what it does. About 25, 30 years ago, I met somebody in Los Angeles who was from Sierra Leone. And I was asking him what it's like to live there. You know, it was a thatched hut. There was no electricity, no running water, and whatever. And Elvis said, that was the word. And in their language, there was no word for why.
Really?
No word for why.
Did you ask him why? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. Why are you asking me that question?
So what that does to a culture, to a people, a country, is amazing.
Yeah.
It's still in Aborigines.
That's unbelievable. I think I'd like to go there for vacation. The land of no why. I would love to be that. Imagine you go to vacation, right, and you can't ask why. You can't ask any questions, right? That's prison. That's prison. Okay, that's it for today. Call two.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.